For February the 3rd, 2017, we talk about Resident Evil 7, some PAX South experiences, and we ask you about your favorite video game demos. Welcome to Level 183. My name is Cole Ross.
My name is David Meismith.
I'm Jala Prendit.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. I'm trying to think of stuff to lead off with. We have a new show on the network, guys.
Yay!
What's that?
Nice.
Yeah, that's the file underwater. Not the file. It's just file underwater. There's no the. That's the REM show that we do.
The band?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that the first episode is out on early release as we're recording this. It will be available at duckfeed.tv or at fileunderwater.net when you hear this. I recommend people go check it out, even if you're not that crazy about the band REM. It's been a lot of fun to do, and I think that we might make a good case for them. Yeah.
So knowing nothing about REM, what does the name File Underwater refer to?
Excuse me. Sorry, I'm just coughing because I can't believe you don't know that. No, File Underwater is it was the original name for the record Reckoning, their second one. And it was written on the inside of the packaging as well. It was like part of the design element. So it just it is a good REM specific name that will not be polluted by a lot of searches and stuff. Like it is kind of ours at this point. And also it's cool. Yeah. I like the name. Yeah. So go check that out.
There.
Yeah. What else is going on?
PAX went on.
Yeah.
It happened. I'll talk about it sometime.
Yeah. Without getting into too many specifics, because we're going to do that during the brief, I believe. Were you able to meet anybody, hang out with anybody who might be listening or might be familiar with network stuff?
Farmer, Zach, Brandon, Jake, Tim, Trey, Joel, Angela, and Will.
Oh, wow.
So that was a thing.
You had something prepared for that.
I had to write it all down because I wanted to make sure I remembered all the people.
Of course.
So there. Those were the people. Ta-da.
Nice. Yeah. And that was all weekend?
That was all weekend. I showed up later on Friday evening, and I did go to a meetup that night. And then after that, I was at the con on Saturday and Sunday. So, yeah.
Cool. David, it's been a while. How's San Francisco treating you?
Pretty good. Starting to warm up. Still in the job hunt. So, just kind of more of the same.
Nice.
You know what's great is, like, I think last episode I was like, one day David's going to come back, but it probably won't be when I'm on because I usually sub out for David. And, well, what do you know?
Yep.
One of those weird things happened when the stars aligned and we are both on together at the same time.
Yes, which is much better than the times when the stars align and Cthulhu is the co-host.
Right.
That's true.
Yeah, so many people went mad. Ben, how's Austin treating you?
Austin's going good. I'm 1 week into my 3 week hosting marathon, so I have people coming to visit. So
I thought you were talking about hosting on the show because I'm self centered.
He's always hosting on the show.
Yeah, that's the thing. So you're having people over, like doing like what do you guys do?
Basically it's an excuse for me to go to my favorite places in Austin and then be like, yeah, this is, I'm being a tour guide, but I'm actually just going to my favorite bars in the city. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah.
mostly for people who live in town, or are you like, do you have people coming in from out of town?
People from out of town. The third guest will be my mom. So that'll be interesting. Nice. I can't remember the last time I hung out with my mom just by myself with being her. So that'll be
weird. Cool.
Whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Guys, this is the most efficient banter we've ever accomplished.
Oh, my God.
Record
that's because Dennis isn't here to, like, put all those wrenches in the works.
Yeah.
And stuff. Yeah, I'm just going to pit it on Dennis because.
Oh, because he's not here. He can't defend
just
himself.
Just because he's not here.
Yeah. Exactly. You know? No, it seems like a really sound strategy to me. We've got the usual kind of show for you, but sounds like I'm in a hurry. It's kind of because I am, because we have a lot of stuff to cover here, in the usual stuff, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And let's get started with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games. Jala, because you're kind of the headliner, I want to keep people in suspense, so let's run that one last. Let's see here. I have a very short one, apropos of the title. Final Fantasy XII, The Zodiac Age, has a release date.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah. So it is coming out in July for people who are excited about that. You know, I don't know if you could be as excited as I am. Man, seeing just like the key art from this thing just makes me want to play that again. It's been about 6 years since I played Final Fantasy XII, and boy, I've been really hungry for those nice international upgrades, the Zodiac upgrades. So yeah.
So is this like some sort of like Zodiac killer crossover or?
No, it's like the Zodiac stuff. The Zodiac signs are kind of a big deal in this part of the Final Fantasy universe or whatever. Like this takes place in Ivalice or Ivalice, however you want to say. But yeah, like the it kind of ties into a bunch of stuff there.
Wait, so is this like Zodiac signs, like, you know, Cancer and Aries and stuff like that?
Yeah. Like there are monsters based off of them and stuff like that. And like Final Fantasy Tactics takes place in Ivalice, and the Zodiac is a big part of that too.
Wouldn't that then de facto prove that like Final Fantasy takes place in the same galaxy
I wouldn't overthink it. I mean, like there is that like stuff. There's a big attack that Sephiroth does in the final battle of people will crucify me if I don't get this right. The second to final battle in Final Fantasy VII, where he summons Meteor and it blasts through all of the planets of the solar system before it goes into the sun, and they're straight up like named in the CGI, like, oh, here's Pluto, because Pluto is a planet, then here's Saturn and stuff like that as it kind of goes through all that. So like, yes, it is weird that it apparently takes place on Earth, but doesn't matter so much.
Fantasy after all.
right. Yeah, so yeah, this is coming to PS4 on July the 11th. This is the 30th anniversary year for Final Fantasy, so I'm excited about that. Yeah, and that's my story.
Are you sticking to it?
I could take or leave it. It's just real short. I don't know. I sometimes do these stories that are just that are just release dates, but I don't know if anybody else does what I do, which is like put these on a calendar so I can like look at it when I'm doing like a monthly review and say, oh, that's coming up. So if you're neurotic like me, enjoy.
Put it down. Yeah.
Let's see here. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, I got one that's also short, but current, and it's about Resident Evil 7. So people are starting to speedrun the game already, and one user, I'll have to look up his name, has beat the game in 94 minutes. The user's name is Trance. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it or not, but yeah. So apparently speedrunning this game is the thing right now for this week. So,
yeah, I mean, that's I don't know if it's so much been a thing in like the more shootery Resident Evils, but like the previous ones, any of the fixed perspective third person ones that this game is more is structured more similarly to, those had a really heavy like, hey, beat it in under a certain amount of time kind of emphasis. Mm-hmm. Like this one even has an achievement for beating it in under 4 hours, which I guess people took and said, hey, hold my beer. Yeah.
They said to their PlayStation 4 as they dropped it on it.
Yeah, and for perspective on this, this is 90 minutes out of like what for me, and I play games just like a little bit slowly, but like just let's just call it a relaxed playthrough. My clock at the end was 9 hours and 55 minutes.
Yeah, so this article is not a knock against the playtime of the game, because this will step on a little bit of what we've been grinding through, but I played a little bit of the demo of the game, and it's been multiple sittings, even though it's a very short demo, I imagine, just because of there's a lot of slow pace because you're scared, at least I am. So, but yeah.
Does it eventually become, like, an actual Resident Evil game?
Oh yeah, straight up. And let's save that for the grind, because we're going to talk about that. Like, yeah, I played and beat it over the weekend. David, how about you? You got a story?
I actually do not. I was looking earlier, and as far as I can tell, nothing interesting happened in video games this week.
That's a little dry.
All the crap I.
Yeah.
The closest I could find is Polygon has a interesting article on from a while back arguing that the Resident Evil movies are the greatest video game movies franchise ever made.
Are they making that argument, or are they just reporting on the idea that they crossed $1 billion across the entire franchise?
They're actually making that argument. Their basic argument is that what they got right is that they just ignored actually trying to recreate the game shot for shot and made a movie that movies that pretty accurately capture the feel and themes and kind of tone of the games.
I don't know that I could disagree more.
Really?
Yeah, I don't care for them. We have a whole episode of Adaptation Decay about it.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I understand wanting to break away and make something that is that is different. You also have to make something successful. Yeah,
I mean, to be fair,
I mean not successful like monetarily. I'm not, nobody can take that away from them. I just mean something that is that is a good action movie.
And I think that that's kind of their argument, is that unlike most, well, I mean, I guess, it's obviously opinion based, but kind of their argument is that, yeah, they are fairly successful.
Huh.
But yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Jill, I want to hear about PAX.
Okay. I'll tell you all about it. Well, first off, I will say that it is bigger than it has been in the last couple of years. So I attended PAX South, for anybody who is just popping in on this episode, which happened over this past weekend. Overall notes about the con. There was a lot more VR floating around. Overall, a higher quality level of indie stuff cropping up, and there was more of it. I did not really look at the board game section, mostly because I don't have anybody to play them with, and I wasn't able to attend on Friday, so with my limited time, I wanted to poke around in the video games. Yeah. I did, however, play an indie board game, but I'll talk about that in a little bit here. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to basically go over some of the games that I played or took a look at. Mostly, I did not touch any of the panels because I just didn't have time. Yeah. It's just like there were so many people and so many lines for everything. Like, okay, they had a Switch. Nintendo was there.
Hmm.
They had Switch as something you could try, but the line was always capped every single time I went by.
As in, like, it doesn't make sense to wait in line. They turn people away.
Okay. Yeah, they were turning people away. And also Capcom was there, and they had a big Resident Evil 7 hut. And I don't know what was special about this hut, but you had to pay to get in the line to do whatever they were doing inside. So whatever.
Weird.
And okay. I was like, well, first off, that sucks. I mean, why are you going to try to advertise your game by making people pay to play the game at the con? And then also,
like a room escape kind of thing.
I don't know. It wasn't big enough to be a room escape, I guess, unless they were cramming, like seven people into something that was like 100 square feet. I don't know. But anyway,
maybe they had really good tacos in there.
I don't know. I was like, I don't know. Is it VR or something? I have no idea what they were doing in there. Yeah. I tried to figure it out, but I, like, every single time I went by there, they were always sold out of tickets. So I didn't even have the option. I was like, okay, I'm not going to camp out all day here or at Nintendo Switch. I'm just going to say no. You know, like, yeah, there's millions of other things I can look at. So I will just have to bow out of these two things.
If I can take you back one step, were there any panels that if you had the time, you would have been tempted to go to?
Sure. They had a bunch of them that were about streaming. They had some about video game music and where it's going and developing now. They had Movies with Mikey, which has Mikey and Chris Straub, who Chris Straub is the creator of the Brood Hollow comic that I like so much. Okay. And those guys do the Chainsaw Suit podcast. And, you know, Mikey is also the creative lead at Gearbox. So, I mean, like, he does a bunch of different stuff and they're at PAX a lot. But anyway, they were going to be doing a panel and I was like, oh, if I had time, I would have probably gone to see that. Just because I listen to Chainsaw Suit podcast, mm-hmm, and I also like Brood Hollow, etc. So is
Chainsaw Suit, that's a webcomic, right?
Okay, that's a comic, okay. But then they also have a podcast that goes by the same name as the comic. Okay. Yes,
yeah, there we go.
So, yep. So, okay, I will tell you about some games. I will tell you about the first three are the ones that I'm most excited about. First one being Earthfall, and okay, by the way, like, I posted pictures of all this stuff on my Instagram and it cross-posted to my Twitter and Facebook. Everything is Jala-chan. You can find me in places in Jala-chan. So you can go look at it. Yeah, I have pictures. So Earthfall plays like Left 4 Dead, but you fight aliens. It kind of also reminds me of Sanctum because the weak point is like their eyeball. And, you know, that's a Sanctum thing where there's like a glowing spot that you can hit that's their weak point.
It's a video game thing.
Yeah, no, it's a video game thing in general, but it reminds me of Sanctum because that's another shooter type game that I've played that specifically you are fighting against alien looking creatures that have a weak spot that's like that, that's a team based. Anyway, it's the same damn setup. I'm going to move on now. I played with a bunch of dudes who were going off about Overwatch and stuff, and they were just like, oh, blah, 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 and just talking about FPSs in general. And so I was like, okay, I'm probably going to have like the crappiest score, right? No, I had high score both times we played. You should give me the sniper rifle and just go away from me and let me do my thing. So that's a thing. So that was pretty cool. I was pretty excited about that. And I got a free shirt, so I have a shirt now. Hmm. Yay. It's supposed to be out this spring for console and PC. It's got a placeholder page on Steam, so that's cool. And
have they made anything else we might know?
I forget who is developing it, but it's being released by Greybox, who also does Dreadnought and other stuff like that. Which Dreadnought, I'm in the beta for Dreadnought. I don't know if they've opened the beta to everybody. It was a closed beta for a while. I think they are now an open beta.
That was anyway, I played a standout that last year, right?
That was the last year and the year before. They were still showing Dreadnought, and they are still in beta. This game has been in beta forever, but it looks really good. It plays really good. I don't know why they're still in beta, but whatever.
They're competing with Star Citizen,
I guess. So anyway, Earthfall. I took some pictures. They had these really cool, models of their two main enemy types. And so I had to take pictures with them and of them. And they're cool.
Yeah.
So, it's neato and I like it. And I'm glad I got to play it. And I'm totally waiting for it to come out. And David, we're going to be playing this. And so are, you know, other listeners. And Sam, I know you're going to be playing this with me and whoever, other people. But those are a couple of people I'll call out. Okay, the next one I'm very, very excited about is called The Shrouded Isle. This game is a coal-ass game. You're the mayor of a seaside. Yeah. You're the mayor of a seaside village, and you need to sate a bloodthirsty dark god that's going to awaken and wreck shop unless you hunt down heretics and ritualistically kill them.
Oh, the visuals on this are fantastic. Holy shit.
I know. It's great. It's like a sick, pukey, ugly green. Yeah, Everything is ugly.
Yeah, it's monochrome black and Game Boy yellow.
Yeah. It plays like King of Dragon Pass kind of crossed with the Yogg, but with like a mystery horror aspect because you have like a limited amount of time and you have to figure out who the heretics are and then burn them. It's great.
Right.
So it's basically, it's called, yeah, it's a cult village management simulator. So
it comes out
in June, and it has a placeholder page on Steam also. And I'm just telling people about that because I'm totally wishlisted all this stuff.
Yeah.
So if you want to, like, you know, follow it, you can just pop it on your wishlist and then be notified when the thing pops out.
Yeah, daddy like. You know. Huh.
Yeah, I knew you would like it. And Tim and I were looking at it, and we were both like, ooh. And then I laughed, and I'm like, that's a Cole-ass game. I got to tell Cole all about this game.
See,
so
the art style kind of reminds me of, have you seen Paper Sorcerer?
No, I have not.
Kind of reminds me of that.
Okay, cool. The third game that I'm very excited about is Mages of Mistralia. It's kind of like Legend of Zelda meets Harry Potter. You're a young mage who just discovers that you have magical abilities and you set off to learn about them. There aren't any hard-coded spells in the game. You have aspects that you learn as you progress through the game, and then you combine those in a grid to create spell effects. So over time, once you unlock all of the aspects that the game has to offer, you basically have, you know, like millions of different combinations that you could potentially make. And of course, there are typical types of spells that are made in order to progress because of the types of challenges that are made, you know, that are presented. But I was talking to the dev, and they were talking about the different ways that players have come up with unique spells to overcome bosses and obstacles. One person, for example, set up a spell that totally one-shotted the end boss of the convention demo by combining fire and detonation spells and then timing it just right that it just went boo, boo, and just killed the boss.
Yeah.
And the thing is, and in trying to replicate it later, the player and the dev could not do it. It was just the timing on that was just perfect. So if that person was streaming, that would be like, oh,
yeah,
you know, like that would be that kind of moment. Another person used an earth spell to push a boss up against a wall, and the boss ended up going through the wall. So, I mean, the dev had to fix something in that way.
Right.
So that's why they're still trying to tweak, you know, get the bugs worked out of it and everything. They are trying to get a mode set up where Twitch viewers can craft spells for the person playing, which I think is really neat. I mean, like, especially
okay, buddy,
with
try
our...
this.
Yeah, well, especially with our community, like some of the people who get really into the technical aspects of stuff could totally like make some bomb ass stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so they're shooting. Yeah, literally. They're shooting for an April release, but Borealis Games Facebook just says spring. It
right.
does have a page on Steam, and it also is going to be coming to PS4. So that's how much I know about it.
Yeah.
So they're shooting for April, but they just say spring. They don't have a definite date just yeah. yet. But
it's
soon.
Like it's like a real top, like colorful top down kind of game. Like what it reminds me of. It's kind of like, hey, what's the action RPG version of like the spell crafting stuff from Elder Scrolls? Like mm-hmm. you know, 3 and 4 plus like maybe a little bit of Magic Circle, possibly.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. Also, so I'm assuming that Mistralia is like the alternate Harry Potter version of Australia.
I was wondering the same thing. I actually didn't bother asking the dev because I was kind of like yeah. watching the game and thinking about other stuff at the time. But I was
Dingo's
wondering that.
Enchanted my baby.
Poisonous beasts and where to find them.
Oh, man. So another one. This one is another one that I'm pretty excited about, but not. It's not like my top tier. It's called Sundered. And it is a Lovecraftian Metroidvania game with both designed levels and procedurally generated levels. It looks to me kind of like Abyss Odyssey, which of course works in its favor because I really like that game. you're trapped basically in a series of caverns filled with...
When you say that, do you mean like, does it have the same like Art Nouveau, like artistic style, or do you mean more gameplay style?
Gameplay style is not Art Nouveau. It is hand-drawn. It's not Art Nouveau style, but it bears enough similarity. Like it's in a series of caverns with monsters and you fight against them super action style. So in a lot of ways, it plays a lot like Abyss Odyssey. It kind of, you know, reminds me of that kind of style. So, I mean, like if you pull up Sundered game and you know you look at the way that looks, it's reminiscent for me anyway.
Okay.
But basically in these caverns there's a bunch of eldritch monsters, and you can either harness the power of corrupted relics to fight huge mega bosses, at the cost of your humanity. And like these powers apparently like eventually corrupt over time. Like they might be strong, but they have, you know, like cursed abilities, I guess, or you know, whatnot. And you can either do that or you can resist the urge, remain fully human and fight them, you know, like the hard way. But the abilities, you know, are up to you which ones you pick. And there are multiple endings, again, depending upon what you do and how much you, I'm assuming according to your humanity meter or whatever. The art is beautiful and hand-drawn, and it's a premise I like. And it looks like the gameplay is up my alley, too, so it's an easy sell for me.
Yeah.
It's going to be available in July. It has a Steam page, and it also is going to be on PS4.
Yeah.
So, Sundered.
The animation in this is really tasty, actually.
Mm-hmm. It's nice. Like I said, I mean, it looks good. A lot of these look really good, and that's why I was surprised when I was walking around. I'm like, damn, the indie's got it going on this year. You know? Whoa. So another one is Forsaken Castle. It is another Metroidvania game, but it's designed in a 16-bit pixel art kind of style. It seems to kind of lean very heavily on the Castlevania aspect, and it has a cute anime girl named Lily as your main character, so that's really the only thing. Like, you have a whip, for real. So, it looks really fun, but right now I can't find much about it on the net, so I'm guessing it's probably going to be on Steam Greenlight later on in the year or something like that. But so, it looked really polished, and it didn't look like it had, you know, much by way of bugs or anything like that from what I was seeing of it. And it's another one of those nostalgic games, kind of like Shovel Knight, you know, where it just kind of panders to that kind of you know, crowd that likes those type of games, and it's got satisfying sound effects and things like that that just make me happy to hear. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, oh, this is a game like those games that I like, you know.
So this looks like for people who listen to other stuff on the network, recall us talking about Momodora 4. This looks like if that cribbed more from Castlevania's kind of style.
Ta-da! Another one. This one will entertain David. It's called Pizza Titan Ultra. Now, I'll explain it like this. Imagine designing a transformer that has a pizzeria in its chest and makes deliveries like Crazy Taxi while simultaneously fighting aliens. And then you have this game.
Okey-doke.
Yeah, normal robot stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like, at first I saw their little banner in the background, and I'm like, okay, like, you know, I wasn't really, you know, paying too much attention to it because it looked kind of like a Crazy Taxi sort of banner in the background. But then I actually looked at the game, and I'm like, that's a fucking transformer. What is this? What's going on? And then he's like, you deliver pizza. There's a pizzeria in his chest, and also there's aliens. And I'm like, what? It looked like a lot of fun. There's like a garage, and you can, like, you know, swap out parts and change your mech. So it's fun. It's the site so far says that it's in early development, but from the bit I was able to see, it looks really polished and workable. So it looks like it's going to be a really fun game to jack around in, but I have no idea when it's coming out or, you know, what systems they're planning it for or whatever. So something I'm going to be watching for, but nothing yet.
Yeah.
So another game is Rhyme. It's an adventure puzzle game where you play a boy who is shipwrecked on a mysterious island. You explore the ruins of a forgotten civilization, and it's really, really pretty. It plays smoothly, and it's another one of those games that's going to be on my list of I got to keep an eye on this. Mm-hmm. It's going to be released on PS4, Xbox One, Nintendo Switch, and Steam in May. There is already a Steam page for it, so you know it's in my wish list.
Yeah.
I got a plush of a fox character that you encounter for having stood in line to play it. And again, this was actually published by Graybox. I don't remember what the name is of the developer for it, but
it's Tequila Works.
Ah, there you go. Okay. I was like, it's something with a T. I don't remember.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but it's really pretty. And I was so upset because I was standing in line for this with Tim and we both played it. And then afterwards we were talking about it and there are these little pig things in the game, right? And I saw them and I was chasing around all the pig things because you give me a little ambient creature and I'm going to go look at it and follow it. And He told me that he got berries from a bush and fed it to the little pigs, and the pigs came to him. And I was like, oh, I almost want to stand in line to go feed the pigs berries. I need to find them now.
Wear a fake mustache, get another fox plush.
Yeah, right. So anyway, I was very excited about that. And that's just like a stupid little detail, but it's nice that they have those stupid little details. But it is a very pretty game, and it's a puzzle. It's a puzzle type of game, and it looks like a kind of game that I would like to play to relax. So It looks like it's going to be a lot of fun.
It's I'm sorry to keep like coming in and just like adding in. No. I'm not revising it. I'm just trying to add on. This art style is eco as fuck. Like right down to the main character kind of having the orange and white.
Yeah, it looks very similar to like a kind of like Wind Waker meets Shadow of the Colossus.
Yeah.
No, I'm down. It looks like a very pretty game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The next one is called Dauntless. It's a co-op monster hunting action RPG that's going to be on PC, and it's going to be free to play. You can sign up right now for the beta on their site, playdauntless.com. Hmm. At the con, you could select one of two bosses to fight. You could either fight a badass owlbear or an armored ankylosaur-looking dude. I was so in love with the owlbear guy that I prattled on about it for so long while we were in the line that I think that all the people that I played with just kind of like picked it just to satisfy the little, excitable short girl who really wanted to play with the owl bear. I was like, I want one. It's so exciting. I like it. Anyway, it plays really, really well, really smoothly. Again, it feels to me kind of like when I'm in Guild Wars and I'm fighting one of the big zone bosses that shows up and spawns every once in a while, except instead of like, 100 people in a zone trying to fight one boss, it's actually just 4 people.
Right.
So it's pretty cool. Pretty cool. It's like something that I'm definitely going to be playing. I did register for the beta, so I will be playing that beta when it comes out. So,
Not bad.
And then the next one is Minibots. It's available on Steam right now for $12.99. It's in early access. It basically mixes up elements, according to them, of MOBAs, arcade, and hack and slash games. I don't really know. I played it, but basically from what I played, it kind of reminded me of something like Nation Red or something like that, where it like, because I was in a survival mode, and so it was like endless horde coming at me, and so I just tried to survive as long as I could.
Yeah.
You play a 4-inch tall robot that fights waves of gummy bears and cockroaches. That's it. It currently only has local co-op, but they're trying to work on the network multiplayer. So eventually it will have online co-op, but not right now. So if it had online co-op, I might actually consider getting it right now. But with local only, I'll wait.
A bit of a hard sell for the way you like to play that stuff.
Oh, yeah, for sure, because I'm totally all about that co-op. Yeah. So Shadow's Kiss is basically Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines in an MMO form. The dev had his... Yeah, he had his theming on point and was dressed like a vampire at the con with gothic tablecloths and stuff. And the flyers were also in line with the whole aesthetic. So it's currently prepping for a pre-alpha kind of thing and is being funded via Patreon and by purchasing alpha access. So it looks good from what I saw of it at the con, but right now my funds are on the short side of things. So I'll be checking in on it here and there and just kind of watch and see what comes next for it. But basically it's a vampire MMO. And it's in the city. They're working on combat elements and other things like that right at the moment. So
I really wonder what's going through the heads of people who are designing an MMO now.
I don't know.
Yeah. I just, it's very curious. I'm very curious what success looks like to them. Cause I wouldn't be brave enough to enter that market even now.
Yeah. There certainly is a lot of competition out there, but they've actually seemed to have a nice little following going for them, and like they might have picked up some more people from the con, so who knows?
But
it's cool.
Cool.
Another one is In the Shadows. It's a puzzle platformer where you use light to chase away shadow creatures or turn them into objects you can use in order to progress. Such as at one point I saw a little shadow guy go, and like his eyes get all big and he freaks out because the light turns on, and then he runs away and then hits a wall, comes back into the light, and then turns into a trampoline. It was really well animated. Anyway, and so you could use the trampoline to get to a different platform and so on. It's coming this spring to console and PC. There is a Steam page up for it. It's got 45 levels with additional hidden levels, you know, that you can find and unlock. It looks very charming. It looks very cute. It looks like something. And again, it's one of those kinds of games that I would relax to. Mm-hmm. Because it's like a puzzle platformer. It's not something that, you know, like is... It doesn't look like it's going to be super technically challenging to the point of, you know, like stressing me out, you know.
Right.
Semispheres is a meditative parallel puzzle game where you use either of the two twin sticks on your controller to move a sphere on either side of the screen around a puzzle. And of course, the screen is split in half, so you've got two puzzles to work at the same time. Mm-hmm. And one of them's orange and one of them's blue. And so, like, you know, it's got like a balance, warm and cool color thing going on. And it's got like ambient music. So this is another one of those games I'll be like, okay, I'm going to play this to just kind of relax. So, yeah. What's interesting is that the devs said that they have stealth-inspired gameplay, things like noisemakers, portals, side-swapping, teleporting, and so on. I didn't see any of that when I was looking at it, but like that is something that is incorporated in somewhere in the 50 levels of the game or whatever. Yeah. It drops to PS4 and PC on February 14 and later in second quarter to Xbox One.
Huh. Yeah, I like the style on this, like the mm-hmm. text, the texture in the background.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
It looks a little bit more kind of considered from a color standpoint than a than the usual geometric puzzle game would mm-hmm. be. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it just kind of comes across very soothingly. Like when they say meditative, they mean meditative. I mean, it's really balanced and calming, you know.
Yeah.
So Beat Cop is a pixel art adventure game where you play a beat cop framed for a murder, and now you need to figure out who set you up. And it's inspired by every 80s cop show ever. I mean, like they have like a trailer that you can watch on the Steam page that is just... Wow. Yeah.
You said Beat Cop. In my head, I immediately went to a rhythm game about fighting crime, which is a like another perfectly valid way to go with that great name.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I like their little icon, like their title logo, because it has a donut that has like blood dripping off of it. Like it got blood on it from some reason. So anyway, it's a non-linear story because it's kind of like, you know, you're wandering around the town and trying to figure out things. And it's apparently got multiple endings to it. So that is about all I know about this game at this time. But the next one is Tonight We Riot. It's an action game where you control an angry mob of working class citizens rising up to fight against the oppression of the wealthy elite. That hits really close to home.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Yeah. Well, anyway, like, I want to control mobs of people and go take down the regime. So anyway, it basically looks like a beat them up, but where you control a mob and it's pixel art style. And
What was that Rockstar game, State of Emergency, that was inspired by the WTO?
Yeah, that was that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
This one looks cuter than that does.
Okay.
That's no. So anyway, it's coming out sometime this year. I have no idea when exactly, but it does have a Steam page, so you can follow it there. The Inner World. This is actually an older game.
Pro tip on this? Oh, sorry.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Pro tip on this, because I was looking at it earlier. Do not read any reviews or comments for this game, because it's all people who don't realize that, like, actually murdering anyone you disagree with politically is not a good idea.
Hmm.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I just stay away in general.
Just throwing that out there.
Yeah.
So, The Inner World is a game that's actually older, but the dev was there to showcase like a new game that they're working on about, I forget the name of it, but it's some kind of slime. Like you play a slime. I forget what the name of the game was.
Some kind of slime is a pretty good name for a game. Actually.
I know, right? Some kind of slime. Well, anyway, I don't remember the name of the game they were trying to showcase, but they were showcasing the inner world, and both Tim and I looked at it and went, that's really cool. I want to play that game. It's a point-and-click adventure game, and it's currently on Steam and iOS, at least. It may be on console. I have no idea. It's got a unique hand-drawn aesthetic. It is apparently about 6 to 8 hours long. It came out in, like, 2013, so it's been a while, but I had never heard about it, so I bought it on iOS because it was $2.99, and I'm totally playing it.
Right.
So I would recommend that you look at the trailer on Steam. It's very cute.
Is it the case that generally it's the developers who are showing their own stuff at this level at PAX, or do they have, like, actual teams of people who are kind of there to exhibit these things?
Proxies.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, you know, like not even like just proxies, but just people who just do that.
No, these are all devs, and I mean, even from the big box stuff down, like these are devs are doing this, it looks like, except for, like, I'm sure Nintendo and Capcom. It's proxies, but representatives, like, other than those guys, like, you know, everybody else, they're actually, you know, people who worked on the game. Yeah. So another one is Attack on Kitten. It's a platformer with a cute and charming SNES pixel aesthetic and lots of cats.
Yeah.
It's about 3 months in on development, but I was surprised when I found that out because it looks really good. Hmm. There's going to be a free downloadable demo on the website attackonkitten.com sometime soon. It looks really cute and fun, and so I'm definitely going to be checking back on the progress. Like, it just looks like one of those charming platformer games that just, you know, you play and have fun with and go, oh my god, it's cute, it's nice, how fun, wee, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and the title is obviously a play on Attack on Titan, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yep. We're getting up there on time for the segment, I think.
So I'll do that later in the grind.
Okay.
I guess.
All right.
I guess. The grief.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I just want to make sure we mix it up. Yeah.
There's so much stuff.
And, yeah,
I wasn't kidding you.
There really is. Yeah. Yeah.
Three,
so
four, five, six. I've got six more games to talk about.
Jesus Christ. Yeah.
Yes.
So yeah, that sounds like the segment. Let's go into the multiplayer. Wait a second.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it. This is a question that Dennis put up, saying, game demos are mostly a thing of the past, but they still bubble up in big ways from time to time. What are some of the most impactful game demos that you have played? Have you ever been convinced to buy a game based on its demo? And we open up here with Ollie, who writes, I bought Rage Racer on the PS1 when it first came out, and it came with a demo for a gun game called Point Blank. It was so much fun that I went and bought a G-Con controller, and to this day, I only have one game for it, Point Blank. And joking aside, it was a fun light game. Yeah, Point Blank, that is the one that's like a shooting gallery thing. It's like Carnival Games. Use that really cool, like the GunCon controller that was shipped with Time Crisis, I believe, and that was one that was like you actually plugged the you put it in between the video signal and the gun and the TV, and that helped to be like super extra accurate, like more so than you know the zapper or whatever.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, Point Blank, good game. Jala, what does Steven say?
Steven says, even though Ground Zeroes is technically its own separate product from Phantom Pain, it illustrated on a small scale how Metal Gear could work in a sandbox and entirely sold me on the rest of Metal Gear Solid 5. Because you weren't going to buy it anyway, right, dude? Okay, whatever. You're super into it. But anyway, more recently, the RE7 demo showed that Capcom heard and headed the want for Resident Evil to return to horror and puzzles while incorporating more modern sensibilities and tactics for upping tension. Again, sold me on the future game, and thankfully I wasn't disappointed in either case.
Yeah, those are both really good. Yeah, I don't know that I have anything else to add. That would have been pretty close to some of my answers, too.
Those are acceptable answers.
Yeah, no, we're good. let me just, my clipboard here, accepted. Okay, moving on. Ben, what does Sam say?
Sam says, not only was Doom a mind-blowing game back in 1993, the demo contained a full third of the levels and had all but two of the weapons. I'm lucky if a current game even has a demo. Of course, between having an adult's income and modern video-based game reviews, I don't need demos that are massive anymore, but Doom's era of PC game demos was definitely something worth remembering fondly.
Is it? I'm not. Well, I mean, I am questioning you, Sam. Is it still a demo of its shareware? Because that also was the case for me and Wolfenstein.
Also, Commander Keen.
Yeah. Just where they would, you know, the first taste is free, right? You know, just hey, just rub this up on your gums. Make sure it's good platformer. Yeah.
Wait, what is shareware?
Shareware, though, that's the way that a lot of PC games were distributed in the early 90s, which is like you would just get a floppy disk. It would either like be shipped with your computer, or it would come in like a magazine or something like that. It'd be the first couple of levels, and if you wanted the rest of the game, if you wanted the full game, you would send a check to an address, and they would mail you the rest of the discs. Like shareware.
Oh, the 90s.
Yeah.
See, it's still pretty common with like developer software. So like no one plays for Sublime Text. They just close the window once a day when it reminds them.
Yeah. And I guess that is true. Like trials have kind of supplanted that, or feature limited free versions.
Well, no, I mean this is straight up like full version. It's just like their business model is straight up just like here, have this, and then like maybe pay us.
David, what does Tim say?
Tim says, Xbox Live Arcade was awash with demos, and that opened me up to a lot of games like Age of Booty, Trials, and A Kingdom for Keflings.
Yeah.
But I suppose the demo that truly had the greatest impact was Puzzle Quest. I played through the demo, and when it asked me to upgrade, I did, but wouldn't let me continue with the game I'd been playing, as it was the demo version. Having to start from square one after leveling up my characters and capture a bunch of beasts, I was unfortunately disinterested in starting it over again. I'm sure it was just a glitch, but the damage was done, and though I revisited it years later, the drive was never there to finish the game. It made me wary of ever downloading a demo ever again. Fortunately, they seem to have gone the way of the dinosaurs at this point. Thanks, Let's Plays.
I think demos like went away even before Let's Plays really hit the scene, because that era that Tim is talking about, when demos were really readily available for free whenever you wanted them, actually proved or gave companies enough data that showed that releasing a demo actually reduced the number of sales. Like they would not get the people who would just buy the game because they were interested. They would have their thirst slaked by playing it for free and then saying, "Ah, well, fuck it."
Well, I feel like that's the given excuse, and that's probably true. I think also a lot of it is if you have a demo, it's harder to make a shitty game.
I mean, there's also that. I think that is a less generous interpretation of the same statement that the developer makes. Yeah.
Also, yep. Age of Booty is a fun game. I had so much fun with that game. I never played the demo, but it's fun. I like it.
What is that?
It's a game where you're a pirate and you have to fight against other pirates for, you know, like towns and stuff, and you get resources and you build up your ship and so on.
Oh, it's an RTS.
It's a strategy. Yeah, it's a strategy game. But it like plays pretty quickly. So like even though I don't typically play those, that one was actually a really quick turnover and it had such cute theming and stuff. I had so much fun.
Published by Capcom. Weird.
Yeah, I know, right? Like weird, isn't it?
Yeah. Capcom was pretty active on the 360, like more so than a lot of people would give them credit for. Let's see.
It's also on Steam.
Wow. Joseph writes, PT stands strong as one of the most memorable game experiences I've had. Hearing about the initial confusion over the sudden release on PSN itself was enough to get me hooked, but playing it and showing it to my friends offered up a lot of fun, scary nights together. All that aside, the atmosphere illustrated in PT was so up my alley. Silent Hills' cancellation still pains me to this day. I mean, Yes. Yeah, I agree. This is
my answer, because that is the best demo that I think I've seen in a game. But it might be galvanized by the fact that the game got canceled. So
right. I mean, but as its own thing, like, I think that a lot of really good demos stand on their own in a lot of ways. I mean, the post image for this, mm-hmm. David, earmuffs, plug yours, is the Stanley Parable. And that demo is kind of flattered as being a really good kind of standalone product.
It's a demo having never played, because then I could have not played the Stanley.
David, this is your fault. I told you to plug your ears.
The problem with earmuffs is you never know when to un-earmuffs.
Yeah.
Stanley
That's
Parable.
That's why
I have developed
a elaborate code of sign language in order to communicate when I'm going to spoiler something to those around me.
And it never works on shows.
It's just the middle finger.
But
what does PT stand for?
Playable teaser. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, it was just a playable teaser for the game. There was no indication that Silent Hills would have been anything like that. But I think that, you know, that legacy kind of lives on in, I think Capcom took note of what Konami did with that, and then just like rolled it all into Resident Evil 7 in a way where the demo really worked to pump up the game itself, was a fantastic standalone product. And they kind of took the design cues from that and said, well, why don't we just like make a Resident Evil game that's like that?
We'll just take this great idea and make our own game with it.
I mean, they're not using it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you going to eat that? Are you going to eat that, Konami? Because like, I could box that up and make it into a stew later, a really ghastly stew that'll be on the table in this demo. Hey, look at this soup; it's real gross. let's see, Jala. What does Raghavan say?
Raghavan says, I had no interest in Nier Automata based on the footage that had been shown in various expos, and I was generally very meh about the whole thing. The color palette, enemies, big red bullet hell-like gameplay, nothing worked for me until I got my hands on the demo. Oh my god. The fluidity and responsiveness of controls, amazing combat, and the soundtrack all got me instantly hooked to the level where I pre-ordered the game off of Amazon, Duckfeed TV tip jar, before I even finished playing the demo. Can't wait for the game's release in March. On the flip side, there have been cases where I played so much of a game's beta that I had no interest to play the game when it actually came out.
Yeah.
That's a thing too.
Yeah. So this is something that's new in demos. Is the Nier Automata demo actually available still? Tell me. Answer me. God damn it.
Sorry, quick, go to Google.
No, I just like that. That's a thing. Like Nioh, the Team Ninja Dark Souls like game, that only was available in these really limited weekend long alpha things almost. I wonder if this is the same thing. Nier Automata looks really good. Ben, what does Michael say?
Michael says, I once bought Zone of the Enders just to get a demo that came with it, Metal Gear Solid 2. I played Zone of Enders briefly, but got way more out of mileage out of Metal Gear Solid demo. Much later, Zone of the Enders HD Collection with 1 and 2 came out. Once again, they overshadowed the real game with a demo of a better game, Metal Gear Revengeance. Really? Konami, talk about shooting yourself in the foot.
That had to have been like a very... They had to have done that with a lot of self-knowledge. shipping another Resident Evil. Or not? God, I'm mixing up my fucking favorite franchises again. God. Shipping another Metal Gear demo inside of that had to have been just an inside joke, like, well, it worked the last time. I mean, that demo was so good we dedicated 45 minutes in our Zone of the Enders episodes to the Metal Gear Solid 2 demo. like to this day, like that is up there with the Eternal Darkness sanity effect stuff that we put into that episode, of like people who say, oh, I went to listen to the Zone of the Enders episode, I thought the sketch would end, but it didn't. You guys talked about the demo. Yeah, we just did a whole episode on the demo within the episode about Son of the Enders. Oh man. And then that was a lot of fun. Ben, is this Ben?
I'll double
no, no, David, what does Phil say?
Sure. Phil says, I played so much shareware back in the 90s. Descent, Doom, lots of great PC games. As far as convincing me to buy, however, the biggest one for me has to be Dynasty Warriors 3. That game had me go from, this is a cool idea, to, it's Lubu! In no time.
Why has Mario never done like a Lubu parody in their haunted house levels? Yeah. I only know Lubu from the meme about Dynasty Warriors, so.
Yeah, he's what? Probably a historical person?
Most assuredly. I just don't know. Because I'm ignorant. Chase writes, the Crackdown demo is easily one of the best I've ever played. It was the first area of the game, but with the leveling increase to the point where you could get very powerful very quickly, giant Superman jumps included. And it absolutely got me to get the game. Runner-up goes to Dead Rising, which had enough to play within the opening area to whet my appetite for the full experience. Yeah, the Dead Rising demo was fucking crazy, actually. Because it put all the impressive stuff about that game kind of on Front Street.
Yep.
Do you have more to add besides yep?
Yep. I mean, it probably did that because it probably sold a lot of games that way. Because you would think if there's that much at the front that there'd be more in the back. And there's still stuff there. But yeah, that I remember this fondly because I feel like this was one of the first demos for the Xbox 360 when demos were like brand new territory. It's like, we can just play infinite games on this new console. Yeah.
Yeah, I spend a lot less money on games because of that feature of the 360. much to everybody's chagrin on the publisher side. Yeah. Jala, what does David say? There we go.
David says, Dragon Quest Builder. Wasn't sure if it was going to be a DQ-skinned Minecraft. Played the demo and was hooked. So much charm in the quest and story structures add just enough direction to make it a fun time.
Man.
I love the degree to which the story of that game just makes no sense.
We forgot how to build stuff. The tyrant took it away. that's literally it. The Dark Overlord took away the concept of putting a thing on another thing. And they totally hang a lampshade on it. Yeah,
it's amazing.
Yeah, the Vita demo on that's pretty great, actually. Man, there's a lot of good stuff here. Let's see, Ben. Yeah. I forget, I've got the order all mixed up. Ben, what does Jonathan say?
It's okay. I'll read anything you want me to, okay. Cole. Jonathan says, I remember getting the original Fallout demo. The only other RPG I played was Daggerfall, and it was refreshing to have something very different.
Daggerfall was a Morrowind or a,
Elder Scrolls.
Yeah, Daggerfall was Elder Scrolls 2.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be curious. I don't know what the Fallout demo entailed. I don't know.
Rad Roaches.
Of course. David, round us out here. We've been going about 25 minutes on the segment. Yeah. Round us out with Jonathan.
Krim says, the Undertale demo dropped back in 2013, and even though it was part of the game that was arguably the worst, it did enough for me to hype up its release for years to come. Not only was it charming and did interesting things, there was one particular spoilery trick that got everyone talking.
I mean, was it the ability to spare Toriel? I don't know enough about like the history of the reception to Undertale.
I don't either.
Yeah. It's a good game. I would have been down to play that demo just out of the music, because the music in that opening spot is like the best part of it.
It's all downhill from the beginning.
No, I mean, the music throughout is fantastic, but like I listened to that track a lot, the tutorial dungeon one. with a cool little piano lick. Yeah, thanks everybody for writing in. I'm sorry if we didn't get to yours, but yeah, a lot of these responses warranted a little bit more discussion than usual. I'll throw mine in real quick. I'm gonna say the Parappa the Rapper demo for me. And this was one that came on like one of those like PlayStation Power, PlayStation Underground. There we go. One of those discs that that ended up, I think it was shipped with my PlayStation, or it came in a magazine or something like that. It was just the first track, but like Parappa the Rapper is such an such a weird concept for a game that like. If I had read about it, like, oh, there's no way that could work. A game about making music, that's nuts. But then I just cracked it open and played this level over and over again, you know, with this rapping karate onion, and it sold me on it. Like, and, you know, it was a very persuasive case. I think, you know, maybe you had to be receptive to it initially for it to be, you know, effective, but it definitely ranks up there for me. Jala, how about you? Any demos stick out for you?
I'm going to be boring and say Stanley Parable, because Dennis was right up channeling my thoughts on that. The Stanley Parable demo is what made me buy the game.
Yeah.
So.
And just that joke with the wall of notable demos on it, like just with screenshots from Half-Life and Metal Gear. Yeah. Ben, how about you?
I think I gotta go with PT. That's one of the coolest demos that I played, and it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to watch somebody else play it for the first time as well, too. Mm. So,
do you help them out?
No, not until not until like maybe halfway through the game, where you have to do things like, I don't know, interpret sound bites and
do a
bunch of weird stuff.
Yeah. I got stuck on the running in circles forever one.
Yeah, you really don't want to turn around after certain events in the game.
Right. So
I did a lot of running in circles as well.
Yeah. And David, how about you?
I'm not real big on demos. The one that probably sticks in mind is the one for Fear.
Oh, yeah.
Which was really cool. And then, just in general, you know, especially at the time, it, you know, was pretty innovative. But the other thing that was kind of cool that I'm surprised more games don't do is they didn't really give you a segment of the game so much as they gave you kind of a representative mashup level.
Like a vertical slice.
Yeah, yeah. So it was fun just for, like, some of the weirdness of that. And then also it gets a little bit of like a Dream Logic segment in which like the environments you're in blatantly don't make sense together.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. Fear shows well, like in a small burst like that.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's everything. Thank you everybody for responding. If you want to catch more of these, follow us, like us on facebook.com/thelevelpodcast, and those go up on Tuesday afternoons. Thanks to either Dennis or Jala for those.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. David, since you have been away for the longest, what have you been playing recently?
Sure. Mainly, I've just been binge playing on Warframe. So, I know it's I played it a while back, like shortly after it came out, and then you know, it was kind of fun, but I sort of bounced off of it, you know, particularly some of the free to play stuff. But then you know, saw a bit of a Let's Play on it and decided to give it another shot, and it has really, really improved a lot.
This is that online mech game that a lot of our listeners like, right?
Yes, although I would say less mech and more you're basically like a Lovecraftian robot ninja.
Okay.
So it's set like in the far future, and you kind of wake up from hypersleep, and you're you know, one of this kind of order of like ninja samurai like protector type peoples.
Okay.
And I'm partially intentionally being vague because like there's some story beats around like figuring out exactly the nature of like the world, and also the because like the game itself is just like part of its thing is being a little weird. It's got a really neat aesthetic in that like all of the character designs and a lot of the a lot of the setup and stuff like that is very, very alien. In fact, one of the interesting things is that like the most overtly recognizably human characters are or factions are the enemies.
Okay.
But the gameplay itself is, a combination of third-person shooter with a big focus on parkour-type elements, you know, wall runs, double jumps, power slides, things like that. And then a big melee focus. So maybe a little bit like, what is it, Vanquish?
Yeah, I was going to draw that comparison, actually. Like, it looks a little platinum-y.
Yeah, exactly. And to the point where, like, for example, I guess I should say one of the things I really like about it that's kind of cool is, the people were talking actually on the Let's Play I was listening to that this is sort of a thing where apparently, this was kind of the game that the developer, always wanted to make. You know, it's kind of their dream game. And so they've simply just gone off the rails in terms of like just adding more and more like little features and like details and stuff like that. So in effect, it becomes, much more like a, it's a game that normally would just be kind of a like freemium, beat 'em up, type game. MMO, but they've really added more and more features to the point where now, for example, the melee system has like a full like combo system and to its melee attacks, things like that. It's got a fully developed traversal system, things like that. So it's a lot of fun. It seems like they've got a pretty solid setup in terms of kind of their freemium thing. We're actually talking about it on the Slack, but it's sort of a thing where the setup of the game, you have your overall character level, and the way you advance that is by equipping different weapons and building up experience with that model of weapon. So you're encouraged to get a whole bunch of weapons. And kind of the way it works is, you can straight up buy weapons with the in-game currency. And it's sort of a thing where the way it's balanced is pretty much at all times you have enough resources to buy or actually craft any given weapon you want. It's just that getting every weapon you want is going to cost money. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah. So like you it gives you enough resources to make a perfectly good, perfectly viable loadout. It's just if you want the flexibility to do more than that, then you have to kind of pay to get that restriction lifted.
Right, and it's a thing where it's like there's three weapon slots, primary, secondary, and melee. And it's a thing where like there's definitely been times where like I wanted to outfit something out in all of the slots and I couldn't. But there's never been a time where after I was done like leveling up all my currently equipped weapons, I couldn't afford to get a new weapon for one of the slots.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always progression, basically.
Yeah.
The one thing that's kind of weird, and again, we were talking about on the Slack, it's got a really weird tone to it, in that like your faction comes across as really, really sinister. A lot of the missions, for example, like a lot of the mission types are just, one of them is just defeat all the enemies. But like the intro kind of like, voiceover from your sort of the person who gives you the missions is just straight up like kill everyone that isn't us. There's a lot of things where like, in particular, one of the enemy factions, basically their backstory is they're a race of clones that were bred as slaves, and the only way they can reproduce is cloning, and they basically through the centuries have built up all these like genetic defects. So it's like these aren't exactly bad guys,
right?
You use a lot of like biological and chemical weapons, things like that. Like there's a lot of weird things where it more comes across not so much almost reminds me kind of the like more tone in like the Matrix movies, where it's not so much immoral as it is amoral.
What's the difference?
It's not so much that you're doing evil so much as it is your characters don't appear to care about morality.
Right.
Okay.
It's kind of a thing where like theoretically you're the defender of the universe defeating evil. The plot line is basically Destiny, like you're the chosen one, whatever. But it very much comes across, the focus is very much how can we best fight our enemies, not like, oh, we're doing this in order to protect the weak and downfallen. So it's really really weird tone. I don't know if it's intentional, but I'd be interested to see if they go anywhere with that.
How does the story evolve? Because I mean, this is an online game that is kind of evolving all the time. Is there an end goal in mind? Like, how is this stuff like meted out?
Sure. So basically, there are the core kind of gameplay is sort of like Destiny. It's just running missions over and over again. But then there's also story missions that are kind of provide a lot of the advancement to the story. And then you also have an item where you can scan different in-game items or enemies, things like that, and get fill out like a codicil of backstory. And that's really what kind of fills out a lot of the world. I will say I just completed one of the bigger story missions for people who've played. It's the Second Dream, and it's very well done, and there's a major plot twist that like it is definitely a game where they do care about the story. So sorry, I'm being intentionally vague. It's one of those things where, like, obviously, I don't want to spoiler anything.
Okay.
But yeah.
Do you have people that you're playing with regularly, or are you just kind of going in and pubbing it?
I'm doing pickup groups. There are two things I would say would be my criticism. One of them is there's one of the game modes that is it's basically area control, domination, that sort of thing, that's basically impossible to play on your own, which is frustrating. The other weird thing is, for some reason, a lot of the weapons, I would say, at least a third of the weapons can only be unlocked via clan research. So I'm probably going to have to at some point join up with a guild so that I can get access to some of those weapons. But yeah, right now I'm just kind of running around and doing stuff.
Yeah.
So I do want to shout out one thing that's kind of funny that I enjoy. There's a weapon called the Sonic Core, which is one of the more popular offhand weapons, and it doesn't do a ton of damage, but it's kind of its big thing is it has a 100% chance to do a knockdown status effect. So it's and it's AoE, so it's really good for crowd control. However, if you equip it with a explosive damage type, it then effectively breaks the game's physics. And so literally, like, you'll hit someone and they will straight up fly, like, more than 100 feet straight up in the air.
And, so straight up like Skyrim style.
Yeah, yeah. The thing is, there's no fall damage in the game, so it doesn't, unless you are, like, near, like a bottomless pit or something, it doesn't actually kill people, but it's basically the ability to successfully or to selectively remove people from combat for like the 10 seconds it takes them to fall back down.
So it's just a very visually stunning stun.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Well, it is funny because, like, I think it's like a 12 round clip and like a semi-automatic fire rate. So it is funny because you can easily take out a group of enemies and then, like, be doing your thing, and all of a sudden people start raining down from the sky. So it's one of those things. I think it's got to be a glitch, but it's been in the game so long that I think the developer has just kind of embraced it. So, yeah.
Nice. What else have you been playing?
Yeah. Not a ton more than that. I've kind of, life has been getting in the way. I've been doing some Vermintide with Dennis. I'm guessing he's talked about that on some of the past shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we've talked about Vermintide. That's actually, I think, in the Humble monthly bundle that just came out or is about to come out.
Nice.
So more people are going to be getting it. That's what I mean. I think it's just the basic thing as opposed to the anything with all the expansions. But yeah.
Yeah, actually, I just have the base thing right now. But yeah, it's I don't know. It's really good. It's Left 4 Dead. You can chop up rats. I think the one standout feature. There's a lot of good features, but one standout thing I'd point out is there's, if you kind of stop and pay attention, there was a lot of effort done to the animation. So for example, if you know, sometimes a room will just have like a single enemy in it, if you go like busting in the door and there's just one rat, it'll, instead of like attacking you, it'll try to like press up against the wall and kind of shuffle, step away and hide. Things like that. So, but yeah, good stuff.
Yeah. Huh. Well, if that's everything, do you guys mind if I talk about Resident Evil 7?
Sure.
Yeah. Well,
do I have to plug my ears?
No, I don't think you do. I'm going to be very canny. I'm just going to talk kind of broadly about why I love it, but... fake out, Ben. Since you played the demo, I want to hear what you think of that, so I can build on it.
Yeah, and so that is all I have played too. So I can just talk about that as a lead-in. Jolly, you played the demo, correct?
Uh huh.
Okay. All right. So that's not spoiler territory.
Nope.
I have not even gotten far in the demo. I've played it 3 times, and like every time something scary happens, I'm like, I'm just gonna go do something else for a while. I enjoy it, but it reminds me similar of like the first Dead Space, where it's like this is very scary, so I like it's a very slow pace and it's very stress inducing. But when you go through like something that you've already gone through before, it's much more fun, I guess, or stress free.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the graphics look really great. The scares are good. The tension in it is really good. I mean, it reminds me a lot of Resident Evil 4, like the feeling of like being in a very foreign place and it being very, very uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, you're in somebody else's house and you're not sure if they're going to round the corner and like just kind of wreck your shit.
Yeah. And what's awesome is like you get up off the ground and the objective just says, get out of the house. And that's that's what you're trying to do in the demo.
Yeah.
It's a very simple concept, but it, yeah. So, I mean, I like that definitely a lot. I guess my one question is, I mean, I don't even know if you get out of the house or not. I haven't played that much of the demo, and most of the footage I've seen of the game, you're walking around a house-like environment, but I assume it opens up beyond that maybe in the full game, Cole, or?
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's just more house, you know, like, so structurally, it actually is very reminiscent of the first Resident Evil insofar as like you have a large house that you that you're looking into as you go along. And then like after you hit what you need to hit there, you go to like a separate smaller structure and then it just kind of spirals out from that. Like
it's like
you,
a mansion.
Yeah. Yeah. So like the demo takes place in the guest house. This family. He's the guy or the patriarch of that is the guy who comes up and says welcome to the family and then knocks you out. Have you gotten to that point?
Nope.
I mean it's a thing, like it's just a thing of this, but like you're in the guest house of this kind of like psychotic cannibal family in the Louisiana bayou and then you know after the opening you're taken to the main to the main mansion, and it very much follows a lot of the template. One thing that I think is funny, and this is kind of ruining a gag, but there is a return of regular ass Resident Evil style puzzles where you're doing like intricate, like, oh, I need to get this particular piece of a thing, or I need to do this on an, you know, just basically counterintuitive, like overly ornate kind of stuff. At one point, Ethan, your main character, says, who the fuck builds this stuff? And one of the documents that you can find is actually an invoice from a contractor. And the contractor is like something and Trevor construction, and that is a nice little callback, because Trevor is the surname of the guy who designed the original Resident Evil mansion. But yeah, it does open up, but like it's at its best when you are kind of going around in these decrepit residential spaces, right? Especially mm-hmm. because that means you're not fighting the zombie equivalent in this game. You're dealing with some really intense, very it's right up my alley style pursuit as gameplay kind of stuff. With one of the family members,
mm-hmm.
you know, so I've, you know, it definitely does try to include a whole bunch of stuff, but like, it really does take cues from PT, but even stuff like first person exploration games like Gone Home, and really just packs this mansion and packs these environments with so much detail. Like they had to have gotten the art director for like the last couple of episodes of the first season of True Detective to consult on just how to make this house look like a filthy, awful hoarder home. Like,
yeah,
not to make light of hoarder or, you know, like hoarding or anything. It is a legitimately scary thing, but like as you go around and like you open up an oven or something and it's just full of garbage bags, or like the, you know, the toilet's full of trash or something like that. Like that, like this is obviously the home of people who are very unwell, and it lends to the sense of otherworldliness and eeriness and just the sense that like nothing is as I really can expect it right now. And if I'm looking in this toilet full of cigarette butts, is this person going to come up behind me and wang me with a shovel?
So does the game cheat much? Or is it pretty legit?
Can you define your term? What do you mean by cheat much?
Cheating being if I check behind me to make sure that someone's not going to wang me with a shovel, I won't get wanged with a shovel.
If it's in like a pursuit section, yeah. But then also there are just kind of points where somebody will come out from around a corner because it's a scripted event. But you also haven't seen that person for a while, so it's not like they have teleported to be in front of you.
Like, okay, so yeah. But it's not like, you know, you'll like check a closet and then
and then like go and do something and they'll come out of that same closet. No,
it's not like Arkham Knight.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But God, this game is so good. It's so goddamn goofy. And just off the wall. Like it kind of goes back and forth between being this really dark and grim psychological horror kind of feel, which is kind of new for the series. Like they pulled in a lot of the like a Silent Hill style steez into this, especially you know, this is the first time a Resident Evil protagonist has been somebody who wasn't combat trained. So you know, you are definitely out of your element, but like they're playing with hallucinations and weird body horror kind of things, which Resident Evil has obviously done, but like the cast is so small and the stakes apparently are so small that it feels more like a cross between like Cabin in the Woods and just some of the weirder, more off the wall like Sam Raimi, Bruce Campbell kind of stuff.
Does it keep, you know, the one thing that kind of would worry me, does it keep the sort of some of the silliness that Resident Evil has, you know, some of the just kind of off the wall, like sci-fi elements and you know some of those things? Because that was kind of my big concern with, you know, seeing the demo, is it kind of seemed like they maybe jettisoned kind of the core of kind of the Resident Evil style.
It's there, but it's not on Front Street. Like it's very similar to the first one, insofar as like this just looks like a zombie kind of thing. Like you just see the effects, and then as you go along you see the cause.
Sure.
So like it spirals more into what you're thinking of, but like it's not like 4 or 5, four was kind of different. It's not like 5 or 6 where that is just kind of like taken as granted as part of the world.
Yeah. I mean more just like some of its like tendency towards just like silly storytelling.
Oh God. It's a comedy in places. Like there's stuff about it that is just more ridiculous than things I've seen, but in a way that is not like boulder punching, or at least in my initial kind of estimation of it, it comes across as better and less overblown than that.
It almost, this might be kind of a dumb comparison, but what I'm kind of hoping it's going to be, and it sounds like it is sort of the Goldfinger type thing of James Bond, where it's still James Bond, but it's not stupid James Bond.
I mean it's pretty fucking stupid in places,
but you know what I mean. Yeah. It's not border punching.
Yeah, I mean it is not like the nadir of Roger Moore Bond kind of stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
I do have to say one thing that drives me crazy, and this is just a thing, but it's almost a point where like this would keep me from playing the game, is how your character holds a knife.
Well, I mean, he's not a knife dude. Like,
but there's literally there are two correct ways, like two ways people
but
hold
knives.
But
he wouldn't know them. You can't hold that against him.
But the thing is, like, if like your average person, if you handed them a knife, would hold it better.
Like, does he hold it like a dinner knife?
The two ways to hold a knife are either like in your fist, like you're holding a hammer, or like generally like with your thumb bracing along the knife so that it doesn't slide forward.
Mm-hmm.
So one is a lot of control. The other is very good grip. He basically doesn't brace with his thumb, but still also doesn't grip with his thumb. so that if you tried to do anything, the knife would just fly out of your hand. It's like...
That shouldn't stop you from playing the game, David.
It probably won't, but it's just like every time I see it, it's like my blood pressure rises. It's like, seriously.
I mean, it's going to be up because of what happens in the game anyway. Like,
that's true.
Yeah. Other kind of general things. There are elements of this game that make it a stealth game, right? Like in the opening hours of this game, like when it's at its best, you are avoiding people. In that way, it kind of has like a similar arc to, the Dark Corners of the Earth game, the Call of Cthulhu game for the Xbox. It does turn into a first person shooter. Like you do get a handgun and a shotgun, other stuff eventually, but like that is just a part of they've kind of gone back to the regular kind of empowerment curve where you're just taking shit the entire first third of the game, and then by the time you get a shotgun and the ammunition is plentiful, the game kind of changes a little bit. And they do cool things to like offset that. And bring stuff onto you. The boss battles, I'm not going to give any particular details. I think they're uniformly pretty great, specifically because of like boss patter and dialogue. I love dialogue in a boss fight, so look forward to that. Things like that. The first person nature of it means that they're able to make the environment a lot more dense, which means that you're going to spend a lot of time looking at stuff and finding notes. Like it is much more exploration based. The spaces are designed really well for, navigability, but also they have these little distractions that'll take you over there. That is the good.
I know all about being distracted during the game because I recounted the tale of what I was doing in the demo last week.
Yep. I mean, it just like that doesn't, I mean, it kind of lets up when you get into different environments, but like when you're in the homes, it doesn't. Like there's so much to look at. This is a very a very beautiful, ugly game. Something that works against it for the first person side of things, there are times where it's very obviously designed for VR. Which is fine, but like when you get that super cheesy, like somebody is trying to shove, a sharp thing into your face, and it's like, it is a prolonged scene where it's a struggle where I'm looking at a foreshortened bladed implement coming at me, like it is one hair away from like firing a can of spring snakes directly at the camera to like let people know they're wearing 3D glasses. Sure. That broke me a little bit. Like it's mostly in the first. In the first portion of the game, with one particular dude who's coming after you, that is a time where it breaks for me. But like overall, this is exactly what I want from a Resident Evil game. Like in a lot of ways, like they're growing back in a direction. It's not really that they're growing back in a direction. They've just made a lot of very smart choices that speak directly to me as somebody who likes the old stuff, but like knows there's been a huge amount of like. Divergent development happening in other kind of aspects of horror and action games. And so to see them, an uncharitable way to phrase this would be that they are cribbing stuff that other people are doing and bringing it in, having just played it, and this may harden or change over time, but like I'm happy that they're learning, and I think that there's enough new added here that like it's a shame that this is coming out in January, because it's going to be forgotten by the time people try to sum up the amazing things that came out this year. There's so much good stuff about to come out. This is like the fact that we're getting this right now. I don't know. Like I can't be effusive enough in my praise for it.
Does it abuse the jump scares at all?
I mean, it just depends. Everybody's sensitivity is different. There are a lot of them. But that is mixed in with a healthy healthy amount of atmospheric scares, and also just a general sense of dread that comes from resource constriction.
Sure.
Yeah. Jolly, you've been pretty quiet. Do you have any questions about this as somebody who is like interested in the game?
No, because I just kind of need to play it.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard some other people talk about how it's difficult and things like that, but it's probably more in the puzzle solving research or resource management side of things. So, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't know. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's the combat. I have no idea.
Yeah. The combat itself, like that is intermingled with a resource restricted mm-hmm. system. It is like Resident Evil 4 or like Dead Space, where the enemies that you're shooting at, it's an aiming challenge. Like you desperately want to hit them in either the head or the limb, so you can either kill them or hobble them to be killed later. Which is about what I want with that grain with the granularity of control that comes from a first person game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, do you think that, like, is this resource scarcity to the point that it's like the old Resi, like the original Resi games, where like you want to skip past people, or do you just literally have to kill everything that you come across?
It's somewhere between like Resident Evil 1 and 4. Insofar as like it wants you to have enough ammo to do things, but it doesn't want you to have enough ammo or health resources to feel completely comfortable.
Okay.
Yeah. Like there are boss fights where just mysteriously in the arena there will be destructible boxes that pop up while you're in another part of it where you can like open it up, and like that is overtly gamey, but it's also a good thing to have in this kind of game.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yep. Super excited about it. The first DLC is out. These like Forbidden Tapes or whatever. And the next one's coming out on like Valentine's Day or something like that, mm-hmm. with another update coming later on. Yes, you did. Gary's like, hey, Cole, can you send me that when you're done with it? I'm like, I'm not gonna be done with it for a while, man, because this DLC looks on point. we'll see. I'm very happy with it. Like I was propelled through it. Like I normally don't. People who listen to the show know that I don't beat a lot of games, especially ones that I start. But this propelled me through. Like this is something
pretty great.
This is something special, I think.
Oh, and on that note, Allison update, I believe she has platinumed the game.
Yeah, while I was playing this, so Allison not only beat it 2.5 hours quicker than I did on her initial like first like single sitting almost playthrough, like in a single day, she had gone through it like 4 times by the time I beat the game, having like satisfied all of the only save this number of times, only use the item boxes this number of times kind of stuff. She's
actually secretly the person who completed it in 94 minutes.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, even if she's not, she's a machine. So good on you. But like it is a game that you can engage with on that level if you want to. Don't take the fact that people are doing that as an idea that kind of perfection is required. It is, sure. It is very kind to somebody who just wants to be a tourist with it. Yeah.
Hooray.
I'm very happy to have gotten a chance to talk about that because it's just so, so good. Let's see. Jala, you had other stuff, right?
The never ending PAX South report. Yes. I have more stuff to talk about. So, continuing on with other games I saw at PAX South, Hand of Fate 2. It is the sequel to a game that I was given by a listener a couple of years ago. It's a game that rolls action RPGs, card games, and text ventures into a single experience, and it's really fun. I have it. I meant to return to playing it, but whenever I open up Steam, it's a gamble as to what I'm actually going to see, in my list and pay attention to. Mm-hmm. But now that I know that there's a sequel on the way, I'll probably jump back in. Hand of Fate is cool. It is a good game. It is very fun. And I'm looking forward to the sequel, which means I have to hurry up and finish the second or the first one. So that's a thing. Kona is an atmospheric adventure game set in 1970 Northern Canada. You're a detective who's investigating a village, and there's like surreal stuff that goes on. And of course, you're trying to survive the ridiculous weather because, you know, you're in northern Canada.
Yeah, it looks looks a little bit like Long Dark, actually.
Yeah. It reminded me of that too. That's Long Dark is in my wish list, I believe, and Kona, I think I also just dropped that in my wish list.
Jala, why is a game set in Canada named after a coffee region in Hawaii? Jala, tell me.
I don't fucking know. So anyway, that's the mystery of the game that you have to fucking solve. That's what you're in Canada for. Oh, you're trying
climate.
To find out.
It's okay. Climate change. Anyway. It's not actually Canada. It is a frozen Hawaii. Yeah, also, right. Frozen Hawaii is an amazing cocktail.
So anyway, it's a lot of
blue curacao in that.
Boo-hoo.
Anyway, so Kona is currently on Steam in early access. So it's got a lot of great reviews and seems pretty solid from the bit I saw at PAX. So I will eventually pick it up. Next one is Embers of Mirim. It's an adventure platformer where you can split into light and dark entities and manipulate your twin sticks to solve puzzles. So here's another twin stick game. To solve puzzles, go past obstacles, and generally just get your traversal on. The developer said that they're inspired by Uncharted and Rayman and things like that, and they mixed the splitting mechanic with platforming, puzzle solving, boss battles, and chases. It's an absolutely gorgeous game, and you play like this little critter guy. I don't know what he's supposed to be, some kind of fox thing, or I don't know, wolf thing? I don't know. But anyway, it's very cute. And it's a beautiful, beautiful game. And the aesthetic is inspired by the Neverending Story and the Dark Crystal. It is so far PS4 only, and it's coming out on PS4 sometime this spring.
They don't say Labyrinth, so I'm not interested.
Become the go-to for like name-dropping your retro nostalgia?
I mean, Labyrinth has been for a while.
Has it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Especially around the time that Bowie died, like a lot of people were pretty public with about being awakened by Bowie's package in that movie. his package and his nimble hands.
Oh boy. Okay. So, moving right along, I've got a couple of VR things in the indie section. Blue Goji is a company that makes VR games and is soon to be launching Goji Care, which is a fitness gamification system that utilizes, at least at the con, an elliptical and a VR headset. The game that I saw being played on this is something like Audio Surf, where you move in the game according to your actions on the elliptical. You're not trying to necessarily hit a beat like an Audio Surf, but just the visuals reminded me of that. And you're just kind of like racing through this kind of, I don't know, space/tube looking, you know, thing. I don't know. So it was interesting to see that they are, there's more, you know, fitness stuff that, I mean, I, you know, there was going to be with the VR and everything like that.
Right.
But, you know, like this was a company that literally like that's their main focus is to try to get that out there. So that was pretty cool. And it was nice to see, you know, people trying it out and like a good swarm of people around there, you know, just interested in taking a look at it. Hmm. Another VR game is Giant Cop Justice Overall.
I mean, is it exactly what it sounds like?
Yeah, it's a 70s style open world VR game where you're a giant cop charged with keeping Micro City safe. And it looks like it'll be really novel to play, at least for a little bit anyway. But it's supposed to come out sometime this year on the Vive and the PSVR. And yeah, it's literally just you can pick people up and yeah, you're just like a big huge dude walking through a town and you're a cop.
That was my third favorite Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, Kaiju Cop.
See, I feel like this is
it's a tumor. I am mutated. Sorry, that was uncalled for. I'm sorry, David, go.
I feel like this is a game I innately can't make jokes about because any joke I make is probably just the thing.
Well, and then too, like there was when I was watching somebody play it, there was a guy who like walked over to the beach and like caught a nudist on the beach, and it was not a nude beach, and they were not supposed to be nude, and so like he was like, you know, picked up the nude dude, and yeah, anyway. So the very last thing that I have to talk about is the only board game that I played.
But before you go to that, is this the first time you tried VR?
No, I did it Oculus Rift, remember?
Okay. Yeah, there we go.
A long time ago, yeah. Back before.
Sorry for
that. So anyway, no, it's fine. It's been a bit. You've slept. You've done some things since then. So anyway, Shadow Over Westminster is an indie board game where everybody teams up against a horde of monsters in the approaching darkness, and you have to scramble to unlock artifacts and investigate disturbances in order to unveil the cataclysm before it's too late to stop it. So it's capital C on that cataclysm. It's a deck-building cooperative game that ended up taking a long time. Like, basically, the con was, you know, pretty much over except for, you know, the concert on Saturday night. And all the guys in the room I was in all went out to go drinking and stuff. And I was, like, busy frantically posting stuff to Instagram to show everybody what all I was looking at from the con on the hotel Wi-Fi. And a couple of them came back and they were like, "Hey, we got bored. We don't want to spend all of our money. We already drank the last two nights. We're fine." So they ended up deciding they were going to play this game. And since I was there, I was like, "Well, I need a chaperone if I want to go out, so that way I don't have problems with people accosting me. So since I don't have one, I guess I'll just hang out with you guys and play this game." So we just played Shadow Over Westminster because we're so riveting and exciting. In the end, we spent all this time doing this, and we were playing until like fucking 2 o'clock in the morning, and the other guys came back and we were still playing the game. I'm like, okay, come on. They are coming home from drinking. I got so mad and I was short tempered. And I was just like, "Brandon, fucking play your game." I was still pissed off.
Did you slam the table when you said that? Because I could hear you do it.
I totally did. I was reenacting. But no, I was on a bed, so it didn't have the same impact. But I was like, you know, cursing like a sailor. And they, you know, Brandon's like, "Oh my God, Jala." Because, you know, I had been very nice and polite and laid back. And then I was tired. It was late. He was just sitting there going there, whiffling back and forth about his options. And I'm like, "Do the thing now. Don't deprive me of my damn sleep. I want to go to bed and I just want to finish this thing. And you're in my way right now." So, but anyway, it was fun. I will say it was fun. Like, basically, there's different parts of the board that represent different areas that you can go investigate, like a warehouse and a university and whatever. And every single time somebody's turn comes around, you flip a card to see if darkness has, you know, overtaken or grown in certain areas. And if there's too much darkness in a particular area, it starts ushering in the cataclysm. And there's basically like, I guess, meters, you know, where you place a little block every time there's a new piece of darkness. And you can go there and fight, you know, clear out monsters that are in that area in order to scatter the darkness and, you know, basically reset that area. So you have to kind of jump around the board trying to put out fires while also trying to build up your deck and get artifacts and increase your, more or less, your power level so you can go and fight, you know, whatever the thing is going to be. And like, you don't know what the cataclysm is going to be until you get to a certain point, you know, after you've unlocked a certain level of you know, the deck building aspect, and you do that by fighting monsters and, you know, taking them back to, I guess, like a, I don't know, like a Ghostbuster repository. I don't know. So anyway, it's really fun. And, you know, there's a lot of different moving parts for it. So I was glad to have played it because I actually saw it, I want to say the first year I went to PAX, and this, you know, team has been here every single time since then and been showing off their game and everything. And I wanted to play it. I just wasn't going to fork over, you know, all the money to buy this game that I couldn't play with anybody other than that one time at PAX, you know, like I don't have it and just have it sit on my shelf. And so it was rather convenient that all of the guys in my room bought a copy of the game and, you know, they were like, "Great, let's play this." And I'm like, "Cool, sounds like a plan. I wanted to play this anyway."
I mean, did you have anybody there who had played it before?
No, they had played the game, at the booth, you know, did a demo with the developer, and that's when they decided to buy the game.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's it. They played the demo, and we were looking at the rule set, and then just I had it explained to me, and we went from there.
Yeah. So. Okay. Well, that's good that you're just not like everybody. Okay, well, let's break the shrink wrap on this and read the manual.
Well, it did. To be fair, Jake had to sit there and explain it to me very patiently about all the stuff that was going on. And, you know, but he did so succinctly and to the point that, you know, like, because the tendency for my eyes to glaze over when people talk too long is pretty strong. But he kept my attention and explained the things, and we got to the game before my attention wandered away. Yeah. So it was good. So good on you, Jake. So
nice.
That's it. That is all I will talk about.
What was that game called for people who may have missed out at the beginning?
Shadow Over Westminster.
Over Westminster.
Uh-huh. You can purchase it online.
Okay.
In places on the internet.
Wow, we've accomplished a lot.
Ah, I'm so tired.
Me too. Cool. Well, if there's nothing else, that sounds like an episode to me. Is there any opposition to buttoning up?
We got buttons. Need them.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the show, episode number 183. Oh my God, we've been around for so long. Coming to terms with that.
What are we going to do for the 187 episode?
I mean, one of us has to die.
Shoot.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not making any kind of claims or proclamations.
I'm just saying, only one of us didn't show up tonight.
but he would have. He was like on deck. It was a miscommunication. That is obviously a joke. We'll figure it out on 187. Maybe every syllable will be punctuated with a gunshot, and the episode will take 4 years to edit. But thinking of network-wide calls to action and such, DuckStream is going to be coming up, or not DuckStream, DuckSpring is going to be coming up here sometime in March. Wait for more information about that, but keep your ear to the ground, I will say. Other network stuff, look to File Underwater for your podcast about a band you may have heard once on the radio but not known was special. That is our REM show. We mentioned it at the beginning. Man, it was so fun to do. I hope it is fun for you to listen to. And we'll be grateful if it is. But otherwise, ratings, reviews, iTunes, tweet about us to your friends. Write about us on a blog, a message board, anything like that. We're super happy to have you here, and we hope you come back next time. Did I forget anything?
No.
Okay. I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been David Mysmith at Mysmith777 on the Twitter.
It's always a guess as to which one of us is actually to go.
I'm really happy that Ben is canonically the last, because that takes one out of the fray.
Yep.
Typically I go right before Ben. So, it's either Dennis or David before me. So
go ahead.
Get
Jala.
It straight, David. Damn it. Okay. I'm Jolaton in places.
I'm Ben Merkel and Merkelizer on Twitter. That's
and,
all.
And stick around for some titles. Okay. I don't have much. I'm curious to hear if anybody has any.
You guys, you fired off you and David fired off some really good ones when I was talking about PAX, but I couldn't write it down because I was talking about PAX.
Yeah.
Damn it. And I don't remember what they were. I was hoping that you had written them down.
No, I'm not going to write down my, the one that I wrote down was my own thing, but I don't generally do that. Did you get anything, Jala?
I have a few.
Okay.
Blood Pressure Rising. David R.E., knife.
What? Oh, David with regards to the knife. Okay.
Yeah.
If or we go David with that Resident one, Evil I knife, feel like I mean, it should be blood pressure, colon, rising.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful, ugly game.
I like that one.
And Kaiju Cop.
All right. David, you got anything?
I neglected to note down.
Okay. Ben?
I only got three. I got a stunning stun. I got. I don't fucking know.
I'm gonna have to veto that because that'll be censored on iTunes.
And then I got a similar one that is I don't know ... because I'm ignorant. Alternate title is just because I'm ignorant.
Yeah. Let's just do that because I'm ignorant. Simplify that. I just have one, which is Frozen Hawaii. As a
wasn't even the one I liked. Oh my god! Sorry. I'm gonna get so mad when I listen to the episode and then I hear those things that you guys fired off that were so good.
Oh. Share it in the Slack. I'm sorry.
I'll be so sad. Blood pressure rising, it entertains me greatly.
Okay, blood pressure rising, like all of those. I'm partial to Beautiful Ugly Game because it relates to the Resident Evil 7-ness of the episode. But Kaiju Cop's pretty funny. I want to go to Ben and David for tiebreakers here.
I don't fucking know.
I've already taken that one off the table, man. Don't make my life hard.
I don't know.
Okay.
No, who's on first? I don't know. I have no strong preferences, so I will be of no help.
Okay. Attaboy. David, how about you? You got an opinion?
I kind of like the blood pressure one. I kind of like the Kaiju Cop.
Flip a damn coin, Jesus.
Well, okay. Well, we just had the voting stuff added to the Slack. Why don't I just put it to a vote? Let's just take those three that Jala recommended, put it to a vote, and I'll check it before. Hopefully, I will find it before it disappears. and let's just see what people think. How does that sound?
Yay! Sounds like a plan.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I like all of those. I see the appeal, but you know, we can do that.
Sounds good.
Cool. Well,
what also sounds good is sleeping.
Yeah, yep. Sleeping sounds fantastic right now.
And tea.
Cool. All right. Take care, everybody.
All right. Good night, guys.
Good night. Bye.
Have a good week.
You too.
You too.
Bye.